Thank you, everybody. I'm delighted to be with you. Thank you for coming out in your late winter for us to be together. We have a great appreciation for the support and the wonderful possibilities of just connect through internet, and just we would just love to be there in person, but this is good enough for this time. Jack, thank you for your very warm introduction. I think this work here has been dreamed for more than 10 years when we just Josué especially, and later on he shared with me when we were still just dating, a desire to see a work of Libri in the south of Brazil. There was Libri in Brazil already starting its work in the central part of Brazil, and it still goes on and is a wonderful work that our colleagues go there. And back then, that was 2012, when Josué started to talk about this, when we started to share some ideas. The work was very young in central Brazil, as you may imagine. But Brazil is huge, as America is, and it felt to us like it would be appropriate to have another work of Libri in Brazil. So we started in my family's house, my parents' house, to do meetings, discussing Libri lectures, just very classic Libri lectures. And that started to draw people in, and we started to develop a few lectures and discussions, and that went on for a number of years until the Lord called Josué and I to go to England. What was initially for 1 year to get to know a Libri work that was established and that was running for many, many years. And that 1 year became 7, and we could not be more thankful for that time. But all the while during those 7 years, the Lord just kept the what we call here Friends of Libri going. People kept on meeting all through the pandemic time, and they were meeting through the internet. And the Lord was just telling us that there was this need and this possibility of a work of Libri in the south of Brazil. It was just a need that, yes, he also saw it. He also desired a work here in the south while we were not involved really with the work here in the south. Others kept it going, and that was always very encouraging. So when the time came, the Lord called us back, and we've been here for just over a year now, and it's been a challenge and a privilege, and it's been really lovely to see the work developing here. So if you remember us in your prayers, we'll be most thankful. And if you want to email us, or if you're ever in South America, please just make sure that you come to us. We would love to meet you and share some in-person time. We would love to welcome you. But I want to share a few thoughts on memory and faith, and I'm delighted to share this with you, because I often struggle with my relationship with God. It is probably daily that I find myself in situations and in thought patterns or behaviors that display clearly where my heart is, and that's not necessarily where I would like it to be. So I realized that often one of the key parts of my struggle is that I forget, and that forgetting who God says he is and what he's capable of and what he's done is too easy for me, and it comes by way too often. And that's where I started to think of the role of memory in faith. And my attempt tonight is to share some of those reflections, some of those questions, and a few ideas with you, hopefully to point us to engage with our memories in a more conscientious way, allowing us to grow in remembering the Lord individually, but also collectively. And I must clarify, I'm speaking into a very scientific community in Rochester. I'm very aware of that. Probably we have some doctors in the room. I am no scientist, no doctor, no psychologist. I'm a library worker. And so please don't hear me as one. So hear me as someone that has an interest in the topic and a lot of questions on how memory plays a part in faith. And I have this interest in seeing the light of what we read in scriptures and what we can learn from the traditions and practices of the church. But I did read some of the science enough to get me some insight that I hope to clumsy share with you all soon. And I also learned that though the science is vast and a lot has been discovered about memory, a lot of it is still very much a mystery, and a lot remains unknown about memory. So that's an interesting fact. So with that clarified, we all know where we are. I invite you to walk with me this path, discussing the importance of remembering. So when I started to look in scriptures, the word remember just started to pop everywhere and be part of the turning of events, of relationships, of beautiful speeches, of stunning poetry. Remember was repeated over and over and over again in scriptures. And the Bible is full of examples that point to remembering. How often the people of God forget the same thing. The covenant, they forget the Lord himself, what he did for them, what they were supposed to be doing. And every time they do it, they turn away from God, they turn away from his ways. And it starts to seem important to me. So I desire to understand how this relationship to what we remember and how we act and live and relate to the Lord work. So what is remembering for? What's memory for? So taking a step back, if we look at our daily lives, memories seem to be quite essential. It is essential for learning, for example. It's through memory that we are capable to learn something. From babies to the highest achieving intellectual, memory plays a central role in our ability to do what we do and to learn what we have to learn. Because we remember in order to learn. In what we learn needs to be incorporated through memory, and then we can learn a little bit more. Think about babies learning language. They learn and they memorize sounds, and then they start to learn that people relate to those sounds, and then that sounds have meaning, and they might use it incorrectly. They might call everybody mama, and then slowly they learn that the other words that are not just mama, and they learn that as baby and as daddy and the other words, and they learn the meaning of that. That because that's memory, we incorporate memory through our lives. Think about a first year student of architecture, for example. All the maths that they will do, all the numbers that they will encounter will only make sense in the first year of college of architecture if you remember everything you learned in maths from first grade. From everything, it is a building experience that memory is deeply involved. It's also important for communication. It's because we have the capacity to remember that we can understand each other. It's because you remember the beginning of this sentence, this one I'm telling you right now, is that you can understand the sentence I'm communicating. It is the same for reading. You must remember the meaning of the beginning of the paragraph, and then you can understand the rest. Any sort of communication needs memory, even to remember who you're talking to and what's appropriate to say to that person or not, and to remember cultural differences and what words and gestures and body movements mean. And that can be very different depending where you are. So remembering is very important for communication. It's also essential for the sense of who we are. Is deeply connected to our memories. What happened to us, all our decisions and our personal struggles, as simple as the things we like and we don't like, it, or where we live, they all rely on memory. We need our memories also for our ideas, for our plans, and also for the stories we share. And this is one of the reasons that dementia and loss of memory can be so heartbreaking to deal with, because there is a loss of access to all of this information of what forms a person. And this is also makes it a relationship meaningful, because there is I hold as one person, as one individual, a lot of memories, and those memories make who we are in our relationship. We share memories, we share stories, and we build on memory. We need the memory to build our relationships. Everybody that we meet in life, we met at some point for the first time, even if those people are our parents. And we build on memory, we build from there. And over time, what happens with those collected memories in a relationship, we start to get to know. That's knowing. We know because we remember. And then with time, we can anticipate reactions, the good ones, the bad ones. We can dream up of situations that will make a person feel good and feel special. Or we can even fear certain situations and dread others. It's because we remember, because our memories are at work. And when there is that loss and loss of memory, we lose so much. And I say this with fear and trembling. And again, I'm no doctor or psychologist, but I think that one of the reasons dealing with the loss of memory of others, of people that we love, is so difficult is because we need to carry all those memories that the other person cannot carry anymore. That's the reason we should nourish those memories, but that's just really hard, because the responsibility for everything that we shared, I mean, the whole time we've known each other, becomes the responsibility of those as to remember. That person loses the capacity to remember their part in the relationship. And that's why when we see, for example, that grandma loved the pink jumper, that's why it's so important to carry on dressing grandma in the pink jumper, because that's part of what makes her who she is. And she's still there, even when she cannot choose the color of her jumper anymore. She's still there and she's still important. And we carry that memory for her. That's why we share the same cake on his birthday that he had for the last 50 years, because that's important, not just for that person, but for us, because those memories are still alive when we have the person around. And we remember for the other person. And that's really heavy and difficult. It's a very weighty task. But it just shows us how memory is a collective thing as well, and not just individual. And is also memory is also essential for history, because it is our understanding of who we are, and we are who we are depending on our shared memories, the one that starts way before we ever existed and flows into history and will continue after we leave Earth. History is formed by the memories that are collected and they are passed on to the other generations. And it influences our life. That's memory that influences our life deeply. What we learn to eat and what's important to share, and how we behave and what's valuable, what's not. And we, in history, you encounter the culture of a village and how these people interact. And that's all connected to memory. The culture of a company, for example, is deeply connected to its memory because it points to how it was founded and what values were important to those that started that business. Or the culture of a people. What formed these people? What memories did they share? What happened to them? Where did they come from? Those are all memories that form and shape history. Memory forms the recognizable we. We share these stories, these oranges, these values. We share them. And all these layers of history are important. All these layers of memory are important to life. So how is memory formed? In very, very simple terms, there is working memory. Working memory is what's happening to you right now. It is the memory that is at work that is facilitating you to understand what's going on to your life at this very moment. You might not remember what I said tomorrow morning, but to be able to comprehend what's going on right now, your working memory is at work, is facilitating your understanding and actually enabling you to understand. Not every working memory will become a long-term memory, because that's what stays with us. That's what shapes us and makes us who we are. And from that, we have what I'm calling living memories, and that's not a scientific term, but I'm interested in memories that live in us, and that they really work within us, and they shape us, and they shape our days, and how we can make those long-term memories, memories that will allow us to be people that trust the Lord that has been faithful and good and is personal and is interested in us, is interested in our lives, and how we make that part of who we are, and how our memories will allow us to live a more a life faith, and a faith that endures through good times and the difficult times. So before we go into the intersection between memory and faith more deeply, I want to ask, how can we remember better? What helps memory? And there are four main factors, according to the science I read. It's attention, familiarity, repetition, and reminders. When we pay attention to something, we are signaling to our brain that something is important. It's more likely that our brain will keep something if we give our attention to it. Similar to attention, moments that are filled with emotion, the positive and the negative, are more likely to live in our brain. Unfortunately, that means, as we all probably know, that moments of sadness, of negative emotion, of traumatic moments, they stick to us very, very easily, and they stay with us in our long-term memories more easily. And they're hard to erase, hard to get rid of. But if we're trying to understand how memory works and how we can remember better, those are really difficult to fabricate. We can't really fabricate emotional moments, but we can pay attention. we can pay attention to things and how we do things and how the Lord's at work in our lives. Another factor that's important is familiarity. Is that the reason we remember the street we grew up on or the old school that we went to? Because we are familiar with them. Knowing something and being familiar with it really helps us to remember. It makes a huge difference. That's the reason you can walk around your house in the dark, because you are familiar with the shape and where the furniture is and where the doors are, so, because you are familiar with it. Another important factor is repetition. We repeat it, we say it again, we look at it again. That's why we repeat things with children, for example, so they can learn, they practice it. And that's the very reason athletes practice, because muscle memory is a real thing, so science tells me. Because we practice again and again and our brain learns to do it. Repetition is important. And reminders. Reminders really help us to remember. Little things will call to mind things that we might not even be thinking about. Think of a meal that reminds you of a loved one. Say it is lasagna. It was your aunt that cooked the best lasagna in the world. Every time you have lasagna, you will think of her. We always do. And we might comment on that, and that will help us to remember our aunt. Or that fridge magnet. Even if it doesn't go to the fridge, it stays in the drawer. When you bring it back, when you see again, it will bring back the memories of the holiday that you had. Reminders really, really help memory. So how does it all intersect with faith? Because if memory is central to our understanding of ourselves, individually and collectively, in our history, in our relationships, memory is going to help to locate us in the world that we live in and allow us to be and allow us to know who we are and where we stand, what we do. But unfortunately, as you might be thinking, our memories fail and we tend to forget. We forget the small things where we put the keys, and we forget a lot the big things. Who is this God that we call to love and serve and worship? And I would argue that forgetting is part of life and is an important one. But when we forget the important things, we might see ourselves in trouble. Just as in regular life, when people start to forget who their people are or where they live, in our relationship with the Lord, if we start forgetting who He is, we were going to struggle. We're going to see ourselves in distress. Because I do tend to forget who God is. And the Bible teaches us that He's good, He's just, He's loving, He's kind. And that He's really there and involved in His creation in the world. He wants a relationship with us. And I also tend to forget who we are. I forget that I'm a creature created to reflect the Lord, to be His image, to have a relationship with Him. And I forget that I'm dust, and to dust I shall return. Just as we reflect on through this time of Lent together as church. And I forget that our lives are small, fleeting, fragile, that I might have many desires and good intentions and good plans, but I tend to fall short of my own standards. And as we hear it repeated, Elbri, we are glorious ruins. And Francis Schaeffer repeated quite a bit, and that we are loved, so loved by the Lord, when we were even seen as so far away. And He loves us all. But in Christ, we are accepted. We are forgiven. And we forget quite easily what Christ has done for us, His incarnation and what He's taught us. And we forget that we are called to be part of this story. Not another story, this story, the story of redemption in Jesus Christ. The one that we already know the end, because we know the author. We forget that we are people in a walk to redemption. But while I tend to forget, God remembers. Our God is a God that remembers. He remembers his covenant, his promises to his people. And I want to reflect a bit on Genesis 8. This is the story of Noah and the ark. And it's right there in the beginning of the Bible. And Genesis 8 starts to tell us the end, tell us the story of the end of the flood. Noah and the family, his family and all the animals are still inside the ark. And God remembers them, making the rain stop and the wind to, and the wind to blow so the waters will lower. And then we have the account of Noah sending the raven and then the dove. And they come out of the ark, as it is there in the picture. Noah offers a sacrifice. And when God smells the aroma, he says in his own heart, I will not destroy the earth again. And then we have chapter 9, that the Lord speaks to Noah and commands him and his family to be fruitful and multiply. And that's exactly the same words that he says to Adam and Eve. He repeats that word. And then what he does, he places the rainbow in the sky. And read with me what he says when he places the rainbow there. This is the sign of the covenant that I make between me and you and every living creature that is with you for all future generations. I have set my bow in the cloud, and it shall be a sign of the covenant between me and the earth. When I bring the clouds over the earth and the bow is seen in the clouds, I will remember my covenant that is between me and you and every living creature of all flesh. And the water shall never again become a flood to destroy all flesh. When the bow is in the clouds, I will see it and remember the everlasting covenant between God and every living creature of all flesh that is on earth. God said to Noah, this is the sign of the covenant that I have established between me and all flesh that is on the earth. He sets his rainbow in the sky as a sign. It is a communication and it is a reminder. But notice here, he says, I will remember my covenant. That rainbow in the sky is a sign for God himself, and he carries it in a beautiful image. And the first mentioning of the word remember in the Bible is God himself who is remembering, is referring to him, not to humans. The word appears more than 200 times in the Bible, and the first times that it comes up is about God himself. He is the first to remember. And in multiple times, the Bible will repeat that the God remember his covenant, God remember his people. And he remembers the person, the history, and everything is turned around when something like that is mentioned. He remembers. But thankfully, for you and I, God forgets. He's willing to do so. If you're familiar with the book of Jeremiah, it is an account of a people really going astray. There are many speeches of Jeremiah talking about the people of Israel and how they left the Lord and his commandments and how much they are far, far, far away from where the Lord wants them to be. But right there in the middle, on chapter 52 chapters, if I'm not mistaken, Jeremiah, we read the account of the regathering of the people of Israel and that how they will be called back to Zion in the presence of God. And how come? How come? A people that rejected the Lord again and again, a people that sinned and worshiped idols and disobeyed and walked far away from the Lord. This is how Jeremiah puts it. Read how tender this is. Is Ephraim my dear son? is he my darling child? For as often as I speak against him, I do remember him still. Therefore, my heart yearns for him. I'll surely have mercy on him, declares the Lord. Because of his love, he remembers, but he also forgets. So a little later on in the same chapter, he says, behold, the days are coming, declares the Lord, when I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and the house of Judah, not like the covenant that I made with their fathers on the day when I took them by the hand to bring them out of the land of Egypt, my covenant that they broke, though I was their husband, declares the Lord. But this is the covenant that I'll make with the house of Israel after those days, declares the Lord. I'll put my law within them, and I'll write it on their hearts, and I'll be their God, and they shall be my people. And no longer shall each teach his neighbor and teach his brother, saying, know the Lord. For they shall all know me, from the least of them to the greatest, declares the Lord. For I will forgive their iniquity, and I will remember their sin no more. I will remember their sin no more. Please don't hear me saying that the Lord has like a similar brain structure to ours and that you'll remember. But he says himself that he remembers and he will forget. And when he says he'll forget, he will not remember that. And that is only because of Jesus Christ. It's because of what he has done, is that he will remember our sins no more. Because in Christ, our sins are forgiven and they are forgotten. Hallelujah. And because of that, because of Christ and what he has done for us, we remember him. When we enter a relationship with him, we seek to love him. Remembering him is the key of life of faith. Who is this God we worship? What has he done? What does he do? What are his promises? We need to be able to recall and call to mind everything that he has shared with us, everything that he has communicated. And as a wealth of knowledge to be discovered in the scriptures and in the history of church, there's teachings to be remembered over and over again. Because life under the shadow of the fall is hard, is challenging, is very difficult, but we must remember our God. And if we agree that memory is what allows us to inhabit the world, to be who we are, to have relationships, to be a believer is a funny thing memory-wise, because to be a believer is to acquire a new set of memories in addition to those that we already hold. Is amongst many other things to profess that the Lord, that Jesus is the Lord, that salvation only comes from him, and many other things, is also to enter a story that we are not front and center and acquire this new way of inhabiting the world, and that comes through also the acquiring of memory. Remembering events and stories that did not happen to us. In addition to everything that the Lord is doing, we inhabit a new set of memory in a new history that you and I have not been the center. It's a journey to becoming part of a people that we were not before, and learning to be part of that. Because we not only rely on our own memory of who God is, but we tell the stories of God's people, of their journeys, of the many times that the Lord delivered them. And ultimately, we remember what our eyes didn't witness, that Jesus himself walked on earth, fully God, fully human, that he taught, that he loved, that he was sent to the cross to die and raised on the third day. It is because of the memories of many that lost their lives to share the gospel that you and I can know that and share that and affirm all that. So we must remember to be able to walk in a relationship with the Lord and to have our lives transformed and upheld by this relationship with Him. And because memory is important to the Lord and He remembers Himself. And I invite you now to look at the Shema, which is one of the commandments that the Lord shares in the book of Deuteronomy. And it's been very important to the people of Israel, and many Jews to this day repeat this prayer, which is also a commandment and has so much in it. It's just so significant and beautiful and reflect with me to look at the Shema and to reflect with me a bit on memory as well. But just think how significant that this is a commandment that the Lord gave to His people. And it is this one that Jesus refers again as the most important commandment alongside with loving our neighbors when He's asked. And we have the accounts in the Gospels. So the Shema says, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. And these words that I command you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children and shall talk of them when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way. And when you lie down, when you rise, you shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as florets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates." So here we have all the elements we discussed earlier about remembering. See with me. Shema is the first word in Hebrew, and excuse my pronunciation. My Hebrew is worse than my English. So hear, O Israel, Shema is the first word. And if you know anything of Hebrew, which I know very little, Hebrew is a language that is just full of life. I mean, and the first word Shema is translated here to English as hear, but it means that really, really pay attention. Listen to this. This is very important. This is the first word that's calling us to attention. And if you remember how we use our memories well, we help our memories by paying attention. And this is the first word. So it goes on saying, "The Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord." And what it means is to have a relationship with the Lord is to get familiar with who He is, learn who He is, get familiar with the Lord. And then He goes on to call us to repeat it again and again. You shall teach them, you shall talk about it all day long, you shall do it every day, all day long, repeat it again and again. And then it concludes to you, "You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, on between your eyes, write them in your house, set up reminders to yourself," because the Lord knows we are prone to forget. So the whole Shema, seen through the lenses of memory, just makes so much sense. It's something that we are called to remember. And there's a sermon by Francis Schaeffer that I will just pick something that I love that he says about memorial stones and reflecting on Joshua 4. And if you are familiar with the history of Israel, Moses is their leader when they leave Egypt, but because of the hardness of their hearts, that generation never reaches the promised land. And a new leader comes, and he's Joshua, and he's the one who's going to lead them through the promised land and through Jordan to the promised land after Moses is not the leader anymore. And he, well, there's a whole discussion. Did he die? But anyway, that's not our focus here. They've been waiting. These people have been waiting for 40 years to get to the land that has been promised to them. And I love how Francis Schaeffer puts it, because on chapter 4, they're about to cross the River Jordan. And again, the waters part in front of them. Now the waters of the river, and they're going to walk through it, and they're going to reach on the other side. And the words of Francis Schaeffer, they make a pile in Gigal. Gigal is the other side of the river. And what they invited to do is that through Joshua, the Lord calls one of each tribe to pick up a stone from the middle of the Jordan and place them on the riverbank, and that will be a memorial for them to show to their children. That's the commandment. That's what the Lord's telling them to do at that moment. When you walk past, one person from each tribe will take a stone and will put on the other side, and they will make a pile and giggle. And we are all called to build piles that remind us of what the Lord has done for us. The Lord called them to do so because they should take the children back then and tell them the story. This, the rocks, the stone would remain there to remind them that the Lord brought them out of Egypt, through the desert, through Jordan River, to the promised land. We are called to build fixed points in our faith. We need to learn to hold our story together. Things that will help us to go back to and remind us of who the Lord is. And I really mean taking up physical things. I don't think the Lord was being just poetic of helping them to build a pile of stones. I think we need the reminders that are physical, that help us to remember who the Lord is. Say it is a picture, say it is a piece of art that reminds you of what the Lord is doing in your life, what he has done. Say it is a piece of journaling, say whatever. We are helped by fixed points that we can go back to. And not only ideas, not only reminders that are intellectual, but also those that are tangible. And that's exactly what's happening here with in Joshua, because they are building a fixed point that they can go back to. When things are hard, they go back to the riverbank. They see the stones back again, and they remember that those stones were taken from the middle of the river. What pile do we need to build to help us to remember who this God that we love is, and who this God that we seek to serve is, and how he works? What is this pile that we need to build? But not only that, it's good to remember that we are called to remember together. This task is not just mine, it's ours. We cannot forget that we are called to be part of a people and to do this exercise together, not only individually. We are helped not only by the pile in Gigal, not only by those physical reminders, but also by our traditions, by our special days. And thankfully, Christianity is full of them for us to remember all the important things that we need to remember. We need to fight against what Bishop Han would call the erosion of community that leads us to not know who we are. Because rituals, in what he calls rituals, are dance, are an exercise in remembering. And we need those symbolic acts because they teach us and they pass on who we are. We need those rituals to be done again and again. And maybe the most significant practice in the Christian history is the Lord's Supper. It is an act of remembrance. It is this ritual, this tradition that we perform again and again. Because in the Lord's Supper, everyday elements, the wine and the bread, are the center where people gather and we remember Jesus Christ. And that's what he taught us to do, an act of remembrance. And in his mercy, he knows that we are very inclined to forget. We are inclined to forget the important things. And he gives us something that, in a sense, so simple. These are, as I said, everyday elements. And he puts so much meaning in it. The bread broken as his body, the wine, his blood shared. It's no wonder that the church has been discussing it over the centuries, because there is a well of meaning in that. But it is an act. We act it out. And we act out a meal that we were not at, but we were not there with Jesus and the disciples, but we are here with his church. We are here with those that gather around those elements. It's a construction of a memory that we share together. And it's going to place us in history because it connects us to that night. And it's also going to place us in relationship with the church, because the saints that came before us share the same meal, and those that will come after us will share that same meal. It is a reminder, physical, a tangible reminder, and it is an act of remembrance. Can you and I remember who God really is? We must. We need to. Because as I said before, our circumstances will change. They simply do. A wise man once told me that if we haven't yet experienced tragedy in our lives, we probably will. And most of us have experienced it already. Our faith needs to endure that, and will be better if it does endure the tragedies and the good and the bad and the beautiful moments. And we are called to look at the stones at Gilgal. We are commanded to take a sip of the wine, to eat the bread, so we can take heart, because he remembers, even when we do not remember, because he is faithful because of himself, because of his steadfast love. So he remembers. And I want to close sharing with you one of my favorite parts of the Bible, if I'm able. Let's see. Oh, technology is failing me. Okay, I'll just read Lamentations 3:19-24. Very well-known verses. I remember my affliction and my wandering, the bitterness and the gall. Those are easy to remember, right? I well remember them, and my soul is downcast within me. Yet these I call to mind, and therefore I have hope. Because of the Lord's great love, we are not consumed, for his compassions never fail. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. I say to myself, the Lord is my portion. Therefore, I will wait for him. Let me see if I can project that for you now. There you go. Yet these I call to mind, and therefore I have hope. Because of the Lord's great love, we are not consumed.